No Filter Sports, yet another episode. It is July 9th, 2020. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain coming at you. Exciting show today. We got Tom Izzo coming up. Want to talk about, preview that a little bit, but, you know, every now and then, as I said this, I see a headline that blows my mind and I got to stare at it. First, it was the social messages that the NBA players could put on the unit. Oh my God, you got to be kidding! I had to stare at that. Yep. Here and here's another one that the Ivy League has suspended all sports for the fall and at least till January, and that the president of Columbia, Peter Pilling, said, "I think other conferences are going to follow." That to me is one of those stunning headlines. I don't necessarily think it's true, but whoa, I mean, as this whole startup, not only nationally in all the states and pulling back, but in sports reflects society, it shows, man, what the hell? The times they are confusing and the restart appears to be falling apart.
Yeah, as though any of those kids are going to actually die. But the point is, Ohio State now has just shut down its football workouts because a number of players have tested positive for COVID-19. As you know, Al Avila has now come forward to say that a whole bunch of Tigers have tested positive for COVID-19. He's not going to give any of their names. They're not going to do that. We know one is Daniel Norris, and there are some others. So, I mean, if you're paranoid about this, then shut the whole damn thing down.
I don't think they need to be paranoid. Number one, as of yesterday, and I was talking to somebody in the Major League office yesterday, MLB, there's 66 people, I was told, that had tested positive throughout baseball. 66. Now, that does not include the staff within an organization, you know, the guys that.
So just baseball players.
Baseball players, 66 guys, that's all. The other thing that struck me was Stanford University, one of the richest universities in the world, has discontinued 11 sports out of the 36 that they produce every year. I mean, this includes, and there are no major sports in this unless you're one of the players. You know, men's and women's fencing, field hockey, rowing, men's rowing, co-ed and women's sailing, squash. I thought you ate those. Synchronized swimming, men's volleyball.
Well, you know, now, Denny, in fairness, I think they're looking ahead and saying, if we don't get the football revenue, then we're going to be so deep in the hole. So a lot of that is preventive against the fact that they may not have any fans in the stands and they may not play at all. So that's why they had to cancel a lot of those sports.
Yeah, and you want to talk about this kind of subject with the paranoia. I don't know if you guys happened to see this. I bet Brandon did, being the baseball nut he is. There's a videotape of new Yankees gazillionaire Gerrit Cole pitching a simulated game. He gets a guy out with nobody on, and they whip it around the infield back to him, as always. But the umpire says, you can't reuse that ball, a ball that Cole likes, due to the threat of COVID-19. Oh, my God, you're going to die, and so are the infielders. So Cole, bitching about it, has to get a new ball from the umpire and immediately gives up a home run to the next guy.
Now let me just say that's, I agree with you.
If you're going to be this upset, shut it down. Shut it down.
Let's see if we can agree on this, because we disagree a lot about COVID. There, very few and hopefully none will die. Right. But there's a difference between death and being ill to the point that it can affect your life. It can affect the rest of your life. And so death isn't the only thing. A lot of young people are getting very, very sick. Now, they may not die, but they may have respiratory problems. So there's a legitimate fear about this. I don't think I would die if I get it. I think I can survive it, but I don't want to get it because it can be very, very bad.
Eli, you and I were talking about a player who decided not to do it after talking to a player who had the infection.
Yeah, that was Nick Markakis after talking to Freddie Freeman and what he went through.
And Freddie Freeman was very, very sick, sick. And he talked the other guy out of playing. The other guy's not going to play now.
So we all read that about Freddie Freeman. And my thought was, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I've tried to take care of myself. I'm never sick. I'm one of those people. I'm never sick. But for everybody else out there listening, and for you guys, ever had a bad case of the flu? Knocked you on your ass for 3 or 4 days, maybe even a week. This happens. This is what happened to Freddie Freeman, and he's just fine now, and let's move on.
Well, okay, then you're saying that all flus are the same, and that's the
big. No, I'm not saying this is the same as COVID. They're different viruses, but the effects of the flu, generally speaking, mimic, generally speaking, the effects of COVID-19.
Now, Jim Harbaugh met also on this yesterday. He had a Zoom call, and you know, I can't disagree with him anyway. He says, and this is what, and you would agree with this, I think, Bob. He says COVID is part of our society. We're going to have to deal with it. There's no expert view right now that I'm aware of that sports is going to make that worse. Kids have got to go to school, et cetera, et cetera. Again, what's real? What is the real effects that this will have on athletes? Will they wind up doing what Clemson did, where they all got it? They said, let's all get it, then we can go on and play. Well, let's say
wait. Boomer Esiason made that charge on his New York City radio show. I'm not sure Clemson actually said that.
Well, they didn't say that, but that's what they're doing. Everybody knows what they're doing.
Maybe.
They tried to get anyway, let's talk more about that later. And I also want to talk later, you know, Bob, I see what you're saying. When you said that you're not going to watch sports because of no fans, I think we all feel that it's going to be less. It's not going to be as good as it was. Should you really try and do this? But there's a curiosity factor. I think we're all going to have to watch.
Oh, we're all going to watch him initially, yeah.
But don't you want to retract a little bit of that? That was a little bit over the top, wasn't it? Well, you're not going to watch any of it?
I'm good. As I just said, I'm going to do what I did with the PGA Tour. Of course, I'm going to turn it on just to see what it's like. First PGA Tour event, I turned it off in 5 minutes. I watched more for obvious reasons of the Detroit event. But again, this is the analogy that I use, fellas, and I'm not off base with this. I'm not exaggerating. It's Game 7. Of the NBA Finals, tie score at the buzzer. LeBron hits an amazing, dramatic three to win the NBA championship, and there's dead silence.
Can you imagine this? Can you imagine a walk-off home run with social distancing?
Listen,
it goes against everything.
And no fans. Game 7 of the World Series.
Can you imagine guys at the plates having to be 6 feet apart instead of jumping? So, yeah, it's going to be crazy and different, but I at least you're saying what's true. The curiosity factor has to make you don't you want to see what's going to happen with a guy on second base in the 10th inning to see how that works?
As I said, I'm going to watch the start, and then Bob, I don't expect I'm going to like
please
it.
Please back off a little bit. I'm telling you, in Korea, they're doing it already. They're having walk-off home runs. It seems like every time I see a highlight on television right now here in Detroit, it's another walk-off home run. And they're coming around third base, and there's guys meeting them at home plate, and there's more meeting them halfway to the dugout, and then the guys in the dugout. So that has not stopped any of these guys from experiencing touching.
We'll talk more about baseball later, the NBA and all that, and all the doubt people have, and is it going to work? I don't know. I guess we got to give it a try. But we got Tom Izzo coming up. Yep. And when I talked to him, he said, how long do you need me for? I said, you got to give us half an hour. Now, I couldn't say give us an hour.
3 hours.
I couldn't say give us three, but that the point is valid. Each one of us could do an interview with him that lasted 2 hours. Sure. So we have half an hour. And what's important? What isn't important? What do we want to talk about? What's legitimate? I have a lot of things I want to get into that are off, and we ought to we shouldn't ask him all the standard things. We need to get a little deeper into it. I want to, for example, you know, he signed these two kids. Can he talk about Amone Bates? Can he talk about Max Christie?
No, he can't mention them by name.
No, he can't mention college.
Cannot mention these kids by name because they haven't actually signed.
Right.
They've committed but not signed.
So perfect.
You know what we should do with Izzo? The same as you do with everybody else.
Yes,
just
sir.
Rock and roll and have some fun and a few laughs.
Because, Eli, there's one other thing about an interview and a guy like Tom. Yeah, a lot of people know an awful lot about Tom, and he's had great success. God, he's the king as far as I'm concerned around here. But the bottom line is, a lot of people don't know what he did. A lot of people don't know about his free throws. A lot of people don't know about his relationship with Mariucci
about his relationship with Mariucci. I don't think we need to know. That's a waste of time.
Vaguely.
Is this some kind of production meeting live
on the air?
It is.
That's what it is. It's live on the air.
And I wonder if our listeners are enjoying our production meeting right now.
The point is, I think that's a perfect example. I don't want to ask him, well, I know you grew up with Steve Mariucci in the UP. What was it like being his friend and roommate in college? No, I don't want to hear that.
But that's your question. That's not mine.
Well, I thought you wanted to ask that question. Well,
I'm going to, but it's...
No, don't ask that question.
It's got something to do with something else. It's got nothing to do with being his friend and laying in bed. It's got nothing to do with it.
Eli, what would Bryant Gumbel say at this point in time right now?
And now let's move on.
Is it fair to ask him this?
Jeez, we're not moving.
I'm gonna ask you this. Is it fair to ask him this?
What have you had this morning? I want some of this.
But let's try not to step on each other. Let's try and go in.
Put your arm up when you're ready.
Okay, because we can all see each other.
Let's try to do this show instead of a production meeting.
I just want to get into. I want to know what the recruiting. I want to know how he gets Amone Bates.
Well,
I want to know how he does this.
Let's move on now.
Okay. Yes. Fine. Yeah. But you can't use the names.
We just said that, Danny.
Yeah. You can't.
I'm anxious to get Eli's opinion. I told him this on the phone earlier this morning. The last of the palace is coming down on Saturday. I guess it's already some kind of shell.
Yep.
But this is going to be it. Finality. And Eli, you worked on the Pistons game so many years and you saw so many games there. Are you a little sentimental about this whole thing?
No, this is Eli.
I'm sentimental
about my career. I think back to, you know, things that happened, games I saw, things I was a part of, the emotions and all that. But the Palace was ahead of its time, and then it became a little behind its time. It had its day. The big problem was, and some amazing things happened there from the championship the first 2 years. Give me a break. That was amazing. You had Malice at the Palace. You had all that stuff. You had Isaiah Thomas and great players and titles and all that. But it's just a building. It really, really is just a building. And it was too small. It was built in 88 by 92 or 3 when the United Center in Chicago was built. Tom Wilson, this guy, said, oh man, that's 50% bigger. Look at all the banquet space they have. Look at how they got the clubs right where you, so they, the Little Caesars Arena is so much more sophisticated and modern over 30 years later that all the Palace is sentiment and history. But in terms of being a venue, it was past its time. So no, I don't feel that about brick and mortar. I felt a little bit about Tiger Stadium and I didn't really like Comerica Park. But man, the place was impossible to play in anymore. Not going to compare the two because the Palace was still functional in many, many ways. But it was time to go. I don't feel anything.
Good for you.
Well, the first time I went, I'm waiting for somebody to break in. The first time I went, I think we might have been the first game there. It was an exhibition game. I was already in New York, but I was back in Detroit. And I saw Eli at the exhibition game, as a matter of fact. We're hanging out together back then. And the thing that impressed me was, you just touched on it a moment ago. Somebody had this amazing, brilliant idea to take so many of the luxury suites and put them down low where you could actually see the game.
Tom Wilson takes credit for that. You know, the old thing. Remember the story when Monahan bought the Tigers, or maybe when he got together with Bo and they laid the whole thing out in the napkin. It's always like they lay it out in the napkin when the brilliant idea hits at a meeting. Well, that's what Wilson said, that it was on a napkin. He had this concept of the bunkers, of they called the bunkers in the suites. Whether it was his idea, whether it came with others, but yes, that was very innovative at the time.
And now it takes about six detectives to find Tom Wilson.
And now they also only had it open at one end. Go into any NBA arena now or hockey arena, and it's open at both ends. One team goes out. They only had one end there. There was no room for a production truck in there. So when I worked for them in the middle of the winter, without having a chance, I'd have to go out in the cold and the ice and the snow to the truck, you know, two or three times a game was very uncomfortable. And everywhere else in the league, the truck is indoors because they had room, because they learned from the Palace that you're making these new arenas, you got to make them different and more modern.
Administration wise, have we ever had a guy more productive than Tom Wilson?
Well, maybe not, but here's the other thing. I talked to Arnie Kander a long time yesterday. He was talking about the new Piston ownership and everything. It was a family business.
Yes.
It was Bill Davidson's toy. He was a billionaire. And a typical Pete Scorch would tell me a typical conversation. Tom would go see Mr. Davidson and say, you know, I really think we ought to redo the entire upper deck. And Davidson would say, well, what's it going to cost? He goes, $6 million. Davidson says, do you really think we need to do it? Tom says, yes. And David says, okay. Do you know the layers of corporate tape and accounting and offices and memos and the crap that has to happen in a normal organization that happens now with the Pistons? So it's a different day and age.
I've made that point. Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say this also, not far away from the Palace, if you are a native Detroiter listening, you've driven the old Dixie Highway many times. I think it ends up in Drayton Plains, right? And goes all the way down to Florida. It was how you traveled south before they built the huge interstates. Dixie Highway in Detroit runs close to me here in West Palm Beach, and a few folks in nearby Lake Worth are just not going to take it any longer. A proposal on Tuesday's council agenda sought approval of a resolution urging the Palm Beach County Commissioners to, of course, rename Dixie Highway because they say it glorifies the nation's racist history. So why don't we just never mention the entire South again, boys?
Well, you've radically changed the subject, and I think that's a legitimate conversation. It's raging in America right now. We're seeing, I think, and you think too, a little overreaction to political correctness. It's involving the Washington, you know, like the statues of George Washington, etc. So this Tammy Duckworth said, who may become the vice president candidate, said it's time for a national conversation. I don't think that's such a radical thing to say. We should have a national conversation.
Well, what have we been having for the last few weeks?
Well, no, because people are going down and tearing down monuments of General Grant and people who I think really, and George Washington, who I think their monuments deserve to stand. But it's worth having a conversation. Dixie Highway is obviously ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
But whatever.
Yeah, Eli, you got a commercial for us?
Well, you're right, Bob. It's time for that. Now, that's why I want to welcome our two new sponsors. Again, tell you how pleased we are to have Feldman Automotive on our side, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer, and featuring its 1-800 pre-owned super center located in Waterford. Also, seven other locations, five Chevy dealers in Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. There's Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, a Feldman of Woodhaven. It means there's a Feldman dealership and a used or certified pre-owned vehicle right near you. Almost any pre-owned car comes with exclusive. Drive it for 3 days, love it, or just bring it back. It is a can't-lose proposition. So we stand behind Feldman, and if you're looking for a new or pre-owned car, shop Feldman. Let us know. Give us feedback. Let us know you went there. We want you to support the show by supporting our sponsors. Feldman Automotive, 9 locations, guaranteed credit approval. You can also buy online at feldmanauto.com, hassle-free at home or in the showroom. Also encourage you to look into Power Home Solar if you've been thinking about alternate energy, based right here in Detroit, America's fastest growing solar energy company. All their state-of-the-art solar panels made in America. You save money, you help save the environment, whether you think that's important or not, and help yourself avoid power outages, because Power Home Solar is partnered with Generac. Generac is the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So at the same time, you lower your energy bills and you eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller and Power Home Solar have financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90 and save an additional $1,800. Support our guys so that they will continue to support us. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right, Bob, you were talking about something before the break?
Yeah, we're talking about Deshaun Jackson, who made some vile anti-Semitic posts the other day. I think, as you all know, he even dropped the unspeakable name, never mentioned it, Hitler, in them. The Eagles on Tuesday responded by calling Jackson's post, quote, offensive, harmful, and absolutely appalling, saying that the team would take, quote, appropriate action. Well, we're waiting for that, aren't we? At least as we record this. Team owner Jeffrey Lurie and general manager Howie Roseman are Jewish. Then another jock moron.
But what did he say? He said, let's give the quote. He attributed to Hitler that said, quote, white Jews will blackmail America. They will extort America. Their plan for world domination won't work if the Negroes know who they were. And he promoted Louis Farrakhan. But Bob,
mind-numbing. Let me mention the second half of that, Eli. Okay. And that is another jock moron, Stephen Jackson of Malice at the Palace Infamy, then tweeted he totally agreed with Deshaun. No relation to him. And then both guys have since apologized. But
there's something to say here. You know, good players never get wiped out. They never get thrown out. It's the mediocre, less players that get run out of the game. Which really surprises me when I think about what happened to Kaepernick. All he did was kneel and was defending a situation in this country. So, you know, how do you defend one thing and allow the other?
That's a good point.
And I just don't get it anymore. It is just pick them if I love them. If I don't love them, the hell with them.
Now, that's a good question. I'm going to give you my answer. Kaepernick did something that was societal changing and overwhelming in many ways because of just the way it went down and what he was protesting, etc. What Deshaun Jackson did was just stupid and ignorant. Terrible. That's all. Terrible. He had no idea. In fact, he said, I didn't realize that. He said, I didn't realize what this passage what was saying. He said, my intention was to uplift, unite, and encourage our culture with positivity and light. So he's just stupid and ignorant. Maybe not stupid. Let's say he's just ignorant.
And Eli, if you saw that responded tweet from Steven Jackson, he wrote it in Ebonics. I'm shuffling through this. Like, can you believe this guy actually speaks and writes like this in public for public consumption? These guys are just dumb. And Denny,
Bob, I'm not sure.
They're not dumb. They're uneducated.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he was doing Ebonics or if he was paraphrasing for somebody else. I'm not sure.
Well, you read it again. So anyway, you mentioned Colin Kaepernick, Denny.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's in the news this week. He's just signed a major production deal with, of all things, the Walt Disney Company. He's going to do a bunch of shows for them. They've already begun work on a documentary series about the last 5 years of his life. There's so much stuff in there. He started a publishing company already. He's going to do his memoir, working on it. He partnered with Netflix. He's got a shoe with Nike. He plans to write pieces and conduct interviews for various blogging platforms. And the moral of our story, hey, there's really big money to be made in this.
You know what the moral of the story is, Bobby? You know what the moral of the story is? N-I-K-E. As long as he's involved with N-I-K-E, he's got no problems.
And I'll tell you one thing he's not going to do. He's not going to hold a clipboard with a baseball cap on and the sidelines and then talk to the starting quarterback when he comes off the field to tell him what the defense is doing.
I still think he's going to play.
That's my prediction. He's not going to do that. You know, I would like to, you know, as I said, with those headlines that shocked me, the Ivy League thing and the social phrases on uniforms in the NBA, you know, Bob, and I'm going to support you, so don't freak out. When you said the other day, because nobody watches more games than you, nobody during the season will get up at 7:30 in the morning to watch last night's Red Wing game from San Jose. So you love watching sports. And when you said that you were so kind of disgusted you weren't going to watch baseball or basketball, it struck me. And then I realized what you're really saying is what we're all saying. I think we're all in the same place. We love sports, and this isn't right. It's weird. No fans, social distancing is very, very bizarre. You know, bad analogy, okay? But sports like this is like sex with a very loose-fitting condom. Better than nothing, but it sure isn't the same.
Well, that's an interesting analogy, I'll tell you that much.
It sure is.
And I put myself up there saying, one that's too big for you, okay? So I even put that out there, too. But it's a thing. But the other point is that I know that you're curious to see, they're really going to put a man on second base? How's that going to work? Yep. So
yeah, we covered this in the first part of the show, but I'm really glad that you mentioned this watching TV thing. The NHL insider, Bob McKenzie, who does a great job, he is reporting that the National Hockey League is going to restart the season playing 6 games a day, every day from noon to 10 p.m. Eastern, of course, in Toronto and Edmonton. So McKenzie says, with each game lasting approximately 2.5 hours, that's 15 hours of live hockey every day at least. And, of course, they may go into overtime. You never know. So are you really a hockey fan, folks? That's what you call yourself? Watch 15 hours a day.
But aren't they also talking about playing an entire season?
No. They're going to just play the playoffs. They got 24 teams. They're going to narrow them down to 16. They'll compete best five.
Yeah. So in the last show, I also asked, okay, that, if they're going to do that, that's fine. When's the new season start? Well, now we have an answer to that. The last day, the Stanley Cup Finals, Game 7, could be played would be October 2nd. So then what they're going to do, according to the new collective bargaining agreement, they'll be back in camp only 6 weeks later, November 17th at the very latest. That means they have just a short amount of time to prepare, and the regular season starts December 1st.
But Eli, hang on a minute. I want to tell you something. You and I are going to go to Chicago if the baseball season starts. I'm going to get us a table for two, $350 per ticket, and we're going to sit on the roof in left field, but $350 a ticket covers our food, beer, and wine, so we're going to be poop-shipped And we're going to have a great time eating them big 14-inch hamburgers.
My daughter lives in Chicago. We walk, and lived in Wrigleyville for many, many years. I wouldn't pay $350 to watch a baseball game from 600 feet away.
From that vantage point? No, no way. Now, here's
the
one.
No, the vantage, I've been up there. It's great. It's monstrous.
On those roofs across the street?
On the roofs. I'm telling you, it's the best show in town.
Here's the problem. No social distancing. They're all next to each other.
Well, you and I will sit about 8 feet apart.
By the way, Bob, the NHL you mentioned, a few other things I'd like to throw in there before, as they get down to a 16-team, four-round best-of-seven tournament, they still haven't officially announced what the two hub cities are. They think it's going to be Toronto and Edmonton.
They
is
have.
Edmonton is Toronto. Officially Toronto and Edmonton?
Yeah. You said in my report, as a matter of fact, that's what they're going to play the game.
I thought that could change, but they still haven't.
So, Denny, I've got one for you here.
Yeah.
And I broached this subject last Thursday, asking what would happen to them. The Blackhawks said on Tuesday of this week they will continue to use their team name because it honors a Native American leader who has been an inspiration to generations. Could you imagine the Chicago Blackhawks changing their name, even though we all know it's racist,
the leader,
right?
I can't imagine the Redskins changing their name, but they are.
Well, who's the leader that they're talking about?
Well, the leader is Black Hawk. And so the way that, you know, I believe that the way the Native American populace in that area feels is that it's an honor, you know, maybe the same way that the Chippewa Nation sees the Central, you know, sees the Chips. But the Washington Redskins and the Cleveland Indians, they don't have that defense. They can't say, hey, by the way, a whole bunch of people told us that they like the Redskins. Yeah. I mean, it's those two names are tough. Well,
the interesting thing about the Redskins, this is what I like about them. Number one, they're not going to change their color scheme. They're going to keep their color scheme. They're going to change the name, and it sounds like they are going to honor either the Tuskegee Airmen or somebody military. I talked about this last show, and it looks like it's coming to fruition because they were having some kind of a committee meeting on it last night. So that would be a nice thing, and they can get away with that, including the color scheme. Nothing wrong with that.
FedEx,
I got a
FedEx
better idea,
and
it's courtesy of a mutual acquaintance, Dan from West Bloomfield, now lives in Florida, of Eli's and mine. He wrote me the other day and said, why don't you just keep the name the Washington Redskins and use a big symbol of a little Redskin potato on it, right? The Washington Redskins. So nobody's going to complain now.
Potato. Yeah, how many ways could you make that look like a good logo? I was reading, I didn't go down to Comerica Park to watch the spring training, I guess you're calling it, but I watched a little clip because the media is not allowed on the field. The camera people can't get on the field. And so it was Casey Mize pitching batting practice with nobody else except him and a batter and a catcher. And I go, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is spring training itself is boring, but at least it's a hubbub of activity. You go down the lake and they're running around in the outfield, they're playing pepper, they're doing their sprints.
And you're talking to everybody.
This is just.
Hey, Denny, I got one for you here too, since you've had a lot of experience with Southern baseball as a player and as an owner. I did not know this. I wonder if you guys do. Dave Dombrowski is moving to Nashville because he's going to try to get a Major League Baseball franchise for Nashville, either an expansion team or obviously a club that would relocate. What do you think about Nashville's prospects? It's a big city now.
I think Nashville's a great city. They got a ton of money. Just that country western money is just bulging at the inches of life. I think they can pull it off. They've been trying to do that for a long time, you know. But they've got all of the facilities there now. They're a major league city. The population down there continues to grow. They got great industry down there now. And I suspect that if Dombrowski moved down there, boys, something's going
on. It's a classic American city. It's the home of country music and all that.
I want to twang my guitar again.
But it's very cosmopolitan now. It's not necessarily country music.
Yes, and I'm sure they know that with business there, how many people, corporations can buy, luxury boxes and all that. Very, very good. I think
they all have them. They still have all their pickup trucks, but they also have Cadillacs and Porsches and everything else.
Eli and I remember very well. I don't think Denny does, but we remember Bob Dylan's album, Nashville Skyline. I was driving back from Detroit to South Florida just within the last year or two, and it was in the evening, so it was dark. And I went right outside of Nashville. Skyline is almost right next to me, and God, was that impressive. Yeah. I mean, it's just become a beautiful city.
Unless you go through there at 4:30 to 6:30, it's not fun.
Can I change subjects, you guys?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, or we can go to the mailbag. Do whatever.
No. I want to see if I can. Patrick Mahomes signed the contract after we had recorded on Monday.
Right.
This is Thursday now, and I just wanted to add a little levity here. 12 years, $500 million. First of all, if he plays 12 years, he'll make more than that. But yeah. The point, because they'll redo it. The point is $141 million is guaranteed. The contract as it is now is not that different from a lot of the top quarterback contracts. The $141 million for five seasons comes out to about $39 a year. It's inched up. I should say inched up a little more than that. It's gone up since Matt Stafford signed for $27 or $28 million a year 4 or 5 years ago. And they're probably going to redo it after a while. So $141 million guaranteed. And so it isn't really as big as you think. And if he makes it through 6 or 7 years, then the average quarterback salary would be a lot bigger than that. Maybe it'll be up to 50 then, and they'll redo it. He could make more than $500 million, but just putting the number out there is a little bit misleading. Just like when Steve Young with the USFL signed the $100 million contract, whatever it was mostly smoke and mirrors.
If, in fact, he plays long enough, and if, in fact, he has enough endorsements and what have you, he may be the first billion-dollar player.
We already have that. We've already got Tiger Woods as a billionaire.
No, I'm not. Listen, you're talking golf, a sport that you don't play very well, but you like to talk about a lot.
I'm 12 now. Come on.
Football is football.
Oh, leave him alone. He's probably twice as good as you are right now.
A 12 for you, I think, is exceptional. I really do. I mean, what I think is you're only playing about 14 holes.
You used to always say you've got no athletic ability whatsoever, which I thought was a cheap shot because I have some athletic ability, just not a lot.
Speaking of money, one real quick thing and I'll get out of the way. Who do you think made more money last year than anybody else in endorsements?
We just had that on the show.
No, we didn't. This just came out.
It was Roger Federer.
No, it wasn't. I'm talking football.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I don't know that.
I don't know.
Okay.
Manning. Believe that?
Still?
Yeah. Over
Tom.
One.
He's talking about Eli.
Tom Brady is number two, and Mahomes was number three.
Eli made more money. Interesting. Yeah.
Eli Manning made more money than anybody else in endorsements.
Well, maybe in New York, that helps a little bit. So if I can do a little this day in sports, the reason I found this very interesting was on this day in 1909 was the first pro baseball game, so minor league game, played under the lights, okay? And I just read a great article in the New Yorker in the last month about the history of baseball. It really featured on Babe Ruth as the first athlete that really marketed himself off the field and made more off the field than on. But it pointed out how Major League Baseball was so blind to so many ways they could have promoted their sport. The technology was there for lights in 1909. Yeah. And they didn't do it for another 30 or 40 years. Black players were Negro Leagues were playing at night. They were doing it because a lot of people worked during the day and they couldn't make it to Yankee Stadium at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Obvious thing. So an example with black players, with lights, and also they gave away their radio rights back then. They didn't realize how much money was in radio. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of showed how backward thinking these brilliant quote unquote promoters.
You can say that all you want, but if you look at the world today and our lives today, we are doing or not doing so much stupid stuff right now that 40 years, 50 years from now, people are going to look back at this era and laugh at us.
Absolutely. Happens all the time.
Talk about something to laugh about? This hasn't happened in a long time. Trevor Bauer wants to pitch every fourth day.
Oh, good for him. Let's bring back the four-man rotation. Whatever. He's a character. 1946, baseball granted its first bumped up the minimum salary to $5,000.
Wow.
1949, Monty Irvin, Hank Thompson, the first black players for the Giants. Will Chamberlain becomes the first in 68 reigning NBA MVP to be traded the next season from Philadelphia to L.A. And it was on this day in 1968, Denny's great season, that Major League Baseball announced it was split into two divisions. Don't forget, when the Tigers won in 1968, within a month of the season, it was the Orioles and the Tigers, and the other eight teams could just go just.
Well, somebody brought this up to me on Twitter the other day. They're talking about how great the 61 Yankees were.
Yeah.
Tigers won 101 games.
Yeah.
Right. Frank Larry, 23-9. Cash, 361. Kaline, 324. Rocky, 45 home runs, 140. And they went home.
And
they didn't even get to play in the runner-up bowl like the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what else? We had a pretty good year in 69, too. A real good year. But Baltimore won, I think, 300 ball games that year.
All right, those are some of the highlights. Let's knock out the mailbag. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to start with a mea culpa here. An old, literally old friend of Eli's and mine, Bill Collins, emailed us to say, hey guys, Bob mentioned Monday that Gary Player was one of the guys who said never touch a weight. Eli added that he was a fitness freak, but didn't lift due to the old wives' tale that it would limit his flexibility. Actually, Player, a mere 5'6", 150, was a fitness pioneer who lifted weights throughout his entire career, part of a strict training regimen. So I'm sure I know I read that story about Player somewhere, but it was wrong. And
I knew he was a fitness freak, and I was sure he lifted weights, but yeah, I figured you researched it, so therefore I said, well, maybe you didn't lift weights. I should have stuck to it because I know that was a fact. Okay, move on.
Frank Brusco tweeted me, hey, Bob, I'm usually critical of Eli Zaret, but man, did he nail it on his take on the Washington football team. That Jewish helmet rant was epic. Good job, Eli. And if you want to tweet any of us individually, you may do so at Eli Zaret, at MU2Denny, at Bob Page Sports. And of course, you can call us. You can email us at asknofilter@gmail.com. Call or text us 760-89-BALLS. Lion King texted, Bob, love your interview with Hilmer Kente. What an absolute class act. Fun fact, I grew up in Rosedale Park in the city of Detroit, directly across the street from Hilmer, and recall how great he was to all of the kids in the neighborhood. Nice thing to hear.
Nice man.
Yeah, I want to mention this from our acquaintance, Norb Madison, the Grosse Pointe attorney, friend of the show. He says, you know, Central Michigan, I think he went there, is known as the Chippewas. My understanding is that the band likes the name for the sports teams. In fact, at last December's commencement, the first speaker was the band chief, a Chippewa himself, who spoke for 5 minutes, including a few minutes in his native tongue, wishing the graduates the best of luck. So,
yeah, Brandon, you pointed that out. There was another school too you mentioned there as well.
Now here's one from Tom West. Let me get through this, and we can comment as we go. He writes, Bob, with the historic and unprecedented times we're in, distractions and entertainment are more important than ever. The current times are filled with disinformation. They leave us all searching for the truth. Your show for a number of months was an incredible distraction from the chaotic and crazy world. I continued to tune in each week, but I kept hoping you guys would stop with all the COVID-19 opinions and the politics. Eli, episode after episode, would promise not to discuss it, yet find a way to force his opinion while trying to silence your rebuttals. Shows like yours are an escape from our divisive and dividing times. People don't tune in to hear this kind of stuff. Tom, he says he's not going to listen again. Tom, I'm sure you will. And Eli and Denny and I try not to argue too much over this stuff. But Tom, it's the story.
It's the whole story.
The sign of the times. That's it. There isn't anything else.
Yeah, that's what's going on. So anything Bruce else? Wrote, and I knew we would start to get questions like this. And Brandon, thank you for responding to him personally. He says, is No Filter Sports on the radio anymore in the Detroit area? If so, what AM or FM station? Thanks. No, we're not. I mean, we went over this. They changed formats at our Detroit radio affiliate, and we are hoping to get more, just not in Detroit, throughout the state of Michigan. Is this fair? David Jones is back with us again. He says, I was a little surprised that none of you mentioned one of the bigger stories from the PGA stop in Detroit last weekend. Bryson DeChambeau going out of his way to dress down a Golf Channel cameraman for hurting his image. The only thing the guy was guilty of was doing his job.
I got a question along that
line. He was out of line. Complete horse's ass.
But I never saw the video, though. Did anybody show the video? It was just reported that that happened. I never saw it, so I don't know.
I think the video is out. Did you see that, Brandon? I think the video is out there.
I saw the video.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Listen, I'm a 12 handicap, and I get so mad at myself with the self-loathing. I don't blame Bryson DeChambeau. You got to blow up every now and then. Go ahead. Yeah.
If I got time for one more, this is from Ron Grubbs, a longtime Detroit sports
Ronnie Grubbs. Caster. Ronnie Grubbs. Hey, Ronnie, he says, second base tonight, hitting third.
Ronnie. Hey, bad.
He says, so Grubber says, I was on vacation for a week, but I'm caught up listening to the shows now. Eric Hipple and Hilmer Kente were great interviews, as always. I have a Hipple story similar to the Mean Joe Green Coke commercial. I was working part-time in the Lions PR department in the 80s. Hip came in. He had a Nike baseball cap. I said to him, great hat. If you ever get another one, I'd love to have one. Eric looked at the hat, then he looked at me, he grabbed it and said, it's yours. I mean, that's just nice. What kind of a guy? And I was kidding him that Eric did not give him the shirt off his back, but he did give him the cap.
That's nice.
Great. More next week or Monday on the mailbag.
Now, I'd like to mention a couple of our important sponsors here. David, before we get to Tom Izzo, David Hall, Hall Financial. It's a great time to look at your options about refinancing. Why not right now? I did it about a year ago. I forgot, you know, I don't think about it every day, but every week my wife sees the payments. She sees that it's lower and better and shorter. We got it down to a 15-year from a 30. So do it. Call David Hall, Hall Financial. They'll work with you. They'll even assess your house or appraise your house without having to come in. They'll drive by during this COVID era. You can maybe even skip up to a couple of payments. Fastest in the business is Hall Financial. They get nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners alone. So go to Hall Financial or get started by just calling 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And of course, Luke Nowacki, our other great sponsor, been with us since the beginning or almost the beginning, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Most people do not spend enough time in their investments. Let Luke help you do it for you. Call them at 248-663-4748. The consultation is complimentary. Spend some time with him, get to know him, and then make your decision then after he answers all your financial questions. 248-663-4748. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Advisory services are through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, product service reference here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. What do you say we talk to Tom Izzo? Let's go. Well, Tom Izzo was known as a frank, personable and media accessible coach. Proof of that is he's here to talk to three questionable characters like us. From his humble beginnings in the wilds of the UP, Izzo rose from an undersized walk-on at Northern Michigan to a Division II All-American. Following a decade and a half as a high school coach and college assistant, took over for Judd Heathcote in 95, 25 years ago. And in just his fifth season, led by Mateen Cleaves and the infamous Flintstones, Izzo Spartans beat Florida to win the national title.
They did it! Wow, everybody's happy for him, particularly the city of Flint, man. You should feel proud.
It is now my pleasure to present to Coach Tom Izzo and the Michigan State Spartans the national championship trophy.
But I'd like to really take my hat off to our four seniors, because they came here 4 or 5 years ago. We made some promises. Michigan State, we answered the promises. We'll see you tomorrow back home.
Yeah. Now 20 years and six more final
Did you look up and see Tom during that little replay right there? He had the biggest grin on his face. Good. He just can't get enough of that, I'll tell you. Well,
it's been too long. That's the problem. I mean, you've got to play something that's 20 years old.
Well, then let's put it this way. You've been to six more Final Four since then. I guess it's fair to say it's been a reasonably decent run for you. Would you agree with that?
You know, I think one of the things I am proudest of, guys, is that we've maintained the level of consistency. And, you know, what my goal is every year is that with 2 weeks left in the season, do we have a numerical chance to win the Big Ten? Because I think if you do that, that means you're knocking on the door. And that's kind of the goal every year, you know. And then after you win a national championship, whether I like it or not, alums like Bob make it so that that's the goal, to win a national championship, even though we know it's pretty unrealistic. But I can't blame the media. I can't blame our alums, because that's my goal too. And, you know, I'm still chasing it. We've gotten to those eight Final Fours, six of them since we won it. I'm going to keep chasing it and keep knocking on the door. Sooner or later, that door is open. Even for you, Eli, I'm sure you knocked on a lot of doors trying to get a date. Sooner or later, it opens, right?
He's still knocking. Still knocking. Listen, a couple of things. This is Denny, Tom. Good to talk to you. Number
nice
one,
to see you, Denny.
are you still doing your 100 free throws a day? And number two, is there a magic number of infected players that would cause you not to play or pause? What is being done?
Well, two good questions. One, I'm proud about. I still shoot those free throws. You know, I missed that one when I was a junior in high school, and Mariucci picked me off the floor. It would have sent us to the final, I think, eight in the state. And I always remembered that. And when I got to college, you know, as a coach, I kind of did that. And I still do it.
Good.
I still shoot a lot of them. I want you to know that. And I make a lot of them now, a lot more than I did in college. So it proves that practice is important. But as far as this pandemic and what we can do, guys, I don't know what the magical numbers are. You know, it scares me when I see what happened at Purdue, what happened at Ohio State just yesterday. You know, you look at the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball now, they're going to kind of set the tempo for what happens to us, I believe. You know, we're back. We've been back for 3 weeks. We quarantined. We've been, you know, so far everything's been good. The 4th of July was a little scary. You know, I had my coaches calling all players, stay off the beach, stay away from people. I'm a little disappointed, guys. I'm not a big political guy. In fact, I hate to say I don't like politics.
We understand.
But I want to listen to the medical people, not the political people. And, you know, I do wear a mask. I do try to do what's right. I'm erring on the safe side because I don't think anybody has a real feel what this virus is all about. All right. Mm-hmm. Now I'm starting to see younger people dying. And, you know, I think we've done an injustice to the younger people because we've acted like it's just the flu. And now all of a sudden some of those people are dying or some of those people are getting lung damage. And listen, it's a bad thing what we're going through.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the numbers would be, but I think they could shut us down quickly. I think they could shut Major League Baseball down. As you know, they could football down and basketball.
Ivy League isn't even trying. Go ahead, Bob. Did you see that? The Ivy League canceled football and basketball.
Yeah.
They got some, you know, I know you think you're – grade level is a little bit above us here at Michigan State, but the Ivy League's above all of us. And if they're thinking this is not good, it's a little scary because they got some pretty smart people. I mean, Ivy League, Northern Michigan, I'd say are the top universities in the country, and then we go from there.
At least top five.
Tom, let me tell you this. The Ivy League is not above my parents' alma mater, which would be Duke University. You are beating Coach K right now. At this stage of your career, at your age, you could almost say these are the halcyon days of Tom Izzo's era at Michigan State. First, you get Amone Bates. Then you recruit this amazing five-star kid, Max Christie. And as we tape this on Thursday, Friday is a huge day for you because Kobe Bufkin out of Grand Rapids Christian, a four-star, has it down to Michigan or Michigan State. He going to announce on Friday. You guys are kicking butt.
Well, you know, the sad part is, Bob, we cannot talk about any recruiting here for me, okay? So I just want you to know
that. Yeah, NCAA rules.
I understand that.
Any of that. And as far as beating Duke, I think I'm 3-11 against Duke. So I got a lot of beating to do to catch up to Duke. I mean, you know, we got him a couple of years ago in a game, but Mike's done an incredible job down there. You know, that's one of the programs that I haven't had as much success against in recruiting or in games played. I'm still chasing him. You know, he's got those 5 national championships. So every day I wake up, you know, I tell a great story that Danny might be able to appreciate. You know, John Wooden back in the day, the first time I met him, I said, wow. I went out there with Mateen Cleaves, Morris Peterson after we won it. And I said, oh my God, I get to meet John Wooden. How exciting is this? So I go there and I'm waiting in line. I shake his hand. He goes, hello, Tom Izzo. Ooh. I looked at my two guys. I said, he knows my name. You know, that's unbelievable, you know? And he said, welcome to the fraternity of 40. And I said, wow, he's 80-some years old. Is he going senile? What the hell? I'm not in a fraternity, you know? What are you talking about? So Bill Walton's standing there. I said, Bill, what does he mean, a fraternity of 40? He goes, you don't know what that is? I said, no. He said, well, there's 40 guys that have won a national championship, and you're one of them.
No kidding.
Well, my God, I was growing right in front of Bill. I went to 6 foot, 6'5". Pretty soon I'm 7 foot looking Bill eye to eye. And I said, man, thanks, Bill. And as I'm walking away, he said, by the way, Tom, John has won 10 of them. So I left the room 3'6", feeling bad. And that's why I look at Mike Krzyzewski. He's somebody that I can, you know, try to work towards and
Eli, may I follow this up with Tom since he brought up the subject? National championships, as you mentioned, you haven't won one in 20 years. If you look at the most disappointing losses you've had, I don't think Carolina in the national title game, because they were great. But I was at Madison Square Garden when you lost to UConn in the NCAAs. I will never believe that Connecticut was a better basketball club than Michigan State.
I've had 2 or 3 that I thought we really could have got there. You know, I think the time we lost in Detroit in the second game to Syracuse with Miles Bridges and Jaren Jackson was a heck of a team. That was when we were going through a lot of things up here that didn't help. But that year with Gary Harris and them, I thought, you know, We had just beaten Virginia, was the number one seed. We were two. UConn was down there, and UConn ended up winning it. I think there were two or three times we had a legitimate chance. And as dumb as this sounds, I didn't think a couple years ago it was the one, but I thought last year we were playing our best basketball at the end of the year. All that cash just went through, and then it was cut short. But you got to be good, as Danny would probably know, and then you got to be lucky. And I hate to say that a couple times luck wasn't on our side.
Okay, for those of you who are listening on the radio in WCWA in Toledo, we have to say goodbye to you. The rest of you stick with us. We will continue. You have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Now, you're also very good at recruiting, and we touched on it a little while ago. We don't have to mention the players' names, understand that. But, you know, there's a process. You've been extremely successful at it, and we all know that. The number of five-star recruits in Michigan basketball. Give us some kind of sense of how that works. You started with the kid we mentioned earlier, his name will be before, back in middle school. What's the process? Does an assistant coach talk to him first? When do you step in? I know Bo used to say, I like to see how he relates to his parents. What is this process, without any giving away any trade secrets, that has made you so successful? How does it work?
Well, you know, Eli, one thing I have done in recruiting is I've tried to put a fence around our state. You know, I mean, look at way back when I started, it was the Fab Five, and I didn't, you know, lost Chris Webber, recruited him since eighth grade. You know, I can talk about guys that are gone now.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. I recruited Juwan a little bit, ironically. But, you know, when I got the job, that was the first thing I tried to do, because I think if you get your players in your state, you get to get them up for football games. You get to know them better. So I've sold that. But I think I still recruit like I was an assistant. And I think you have to at this level. You know, there's certain coaches out there that maybe the schools recruit. You know, I don't think we're a destination spot. And I think the minute I think we are, I think it'll hurt us. I think we just got to grind it. And we do get some very good players, but we kind of mix them in with some four-year guys. And I think that's where our success has been. We're still a blue-collar program, and I'm proud of that.
I got to tell you something. I'm going to take this just off the street a little bit. We've all coached someplace, right? I mean, when I got out of baseball, I coached for the White Sox a little bit with some of the alleged superstars that they had there. Alleged, and I say they were most suspects rather than prospects. And the reason I got out of it was so quickly, within 3 months, was that parents started calling me and wanted to know why his kid wasn't ahead of the other kid that I wrote a great report on. And I know you can't name the players, but bottom line, you ever have the parents give you a call and say, hey, coach, come on, you got to play my kid?
That's one of the things that is getting the hardest in this job. Okay. There's so many people that are getting to these kids so young. You know, AAU basketball has got a couple good things to it, but it's got some problems. You know, now we've got agents in the high schools. You know, things have changed. I mean, baseball has kind of had that for a long time. Advisors, hockey have had that a little bit more. Football's, you know, got it probably the best, because those kids know they can't go for 3 years. Pretty soon, kids are going to be coming out of high school again. They can come after 1 year. We got the G League. You know, we got all that thing. Now, baseball does have some of that. I actually, for a lot of years, enjoyed the baseball rule. If you're good enough to come out, you come out. If not, you know, I remember when Johnny Smoltz was here, hell, we were going to get him out for basketball, and at the last minute, you know, 11:50, he decided to go pro. He had till 12 o'clock and made a pretty good decision, by the way.
He sure did.
But my point is, you know, there's the battle. Is the farm clubs better? Is the G League better? You know, the one thing I do like about college, it helps a guy grow socially too, you know, and you're not thrown into that mess. Plus academically, even if you're there 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, but it has been harder to manage, and parents and outside people, you know, they call them in basketball, in the NBA, you know, does he have a posse with him? I don't know if you have that in baseball. I think football has a little bit of that, but you know, I think too many people are listening to too many people. And, you know, all I want for my guys, hey, I'm from Iron Mountain, Michigan, got a chance to live my dream. I just want my guys to get a chance to live theirs.
Do the parents interact with you much?
You know, there's one thing I've done, you know, like I was brought up on the Judd Heathcote, Bobby Knight, Gene Cady, Bo Schembechler, you know, all became a good friend. Bo wasn't having weekly meetings with any parents. I can
get off the parents thing.
And Bobby Knight, he didn't have any. And Bobby and Bo were good friends. Judd and Bo were good friends. So I was brought up in that kind of mentality. But the one thing I have changed here, I go by that theory, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. Yeah. So I do deal with the parents, but I'm upfront with them. You know, you want to know why your kid's not playing? Come on up and watch a practice, you know? Wow. And so I'm more of an open book in that respect, which takes a little more time, but has really served well for me. And I've had a great relationship with the parents. It's getting a little harder in recruiting because you can't do those things. But once I get them here, it's been really good.
Let me ask you about recruiting. How much cheating do you see out there now? Because you're recruiting all the top high school players, certainly in the eastern part of the country. And how does the amount of cheating and recruiting now compared to when you first became head coach at Michigan State?
Well, that's a good question, you know, because there's always been cheating. There's always been cheating in every sport, in every way, you know. But, you know, you see some of the things that have come out, like the scheme show and this and that. I mean, it kind of blows people away. I don't think it blows us away as much. But I think, too, so many times, too many guys use, well, you got cheated on because they didn't do their work. You know, Judd Heathcote had a 10% rule. You know, 10% of broadcasters are bad people. 10% of coaches are bad people. 10% of doctors are bad people. You know, I mean, unfortunately, we've learned in the last 10 years, 10% of priests are bad people. You know, yeah. I mean, that. And probably 30% of lawyers, you know. No, I'm just kidding. Every profession's got its negatives. And, you know, there's been kids I know ahead of time where it's going. I know who's recruiting them. I just bow out, you know. I thank God I've been in a conference that our conference in general has been a pretty clean conference over the years. And when you had guys like Knight and Katie and those guys, when you got guys like Bo Schembechler in all seriousness, yeah. I think those are positives. And, you know, how long it's going to last, I don't know. How long I'm going to last, I don't know. But it's been good for me. You know, it's worked well for me, and I'm going to just keep doing it.
You know, the older I get, the more fascinating being 21 years old seems to me. I mean, what a time in your life. I think back to where I was at that time. And this is what you deal with. You deal with boys that are 18 to 22. And not only that, they got to be student athletes. When I think about what I was like at 21, could I have been a full-time basketball player, stayed conditioned, been to practice, play at night, play during the day, travel, and still been a student? Frankly, I don't know how they do it. And frankly, has it changed? I mean, you started at 40, now you're 65. Are the kids the same? Is the amount they have to put out the same? What's changed, and what is it like to be with these kids at this age of their life and be such a mentor?
Well, it would be an interesting thing to turn it a little bit. So after I answer it, Denny, I'm going to throw it on you because you played, you coached a little bit at that level. I hear all the time that kids have changed. I think we, the adults, have changed. We don't hold kids accountable. You know, if they had cell phones, Eli, when you went to school, you wouldn't be in this position right now, probably. No insult intended. I'm just giving you the real truth here. Right. And even for Mariucci and I mean, we just got cell phones in the UP a couple of years ago, so it's a little different for us up there. But you know, kids got to deal with a lot, you know, and we blame the kids. But how would you be if everybody was telling you how great you are every day on a social media or a tweet or a text or telling you how bad you are every day? Yeah. And those things, you know, Denny, you didn't have to deal with them as much. I mean, they're the last 10 years, the social media thing has changed the game for coaches and players.
Yeah.
But I don't think players... The great ones, okay, the great ones wanted to win back in your era, Denny. They want to win in Magic's era. They want to win in this era. The great ones still, I think, are driven people that want to be great.
Well, I think, too, our parents back then were a different kind of direction. They wanted us to do well in school, number one, always well in school. They never were driving sports as the number one thing in our life. Today, you see a 15-year-old kid dear God, throwing curveballs and sliders at 15, I go crazy. And all of a sudden, he's the next Sandy Koufax, or he's the next Babe Ruth because he can hit a ball 350 feet. That's what I don't understand. And then you've got a father and an uncle and a grandmother and a grandfather. God, I was guilty of it too at one time. Just telling them how damn good they are. And yeah, you know what? And then when you walk away, you say, did I really say that? You know? Yeah.
And the sad part is that kid really heard that.
Yes.
So then when we say, why is he like he is? Well, we created that. And that's where I've, you know, I mean, I've gone through my stuff, waving a finger at a guy, everybody mad at me, you know. You know what? If you have a relationship with people, I think you have the, it gives you a license to coach them. If you don't have a relationship, you know, because you should know a guy inside and out. And,
sure,
and that's what I prided myself on. You asked me what I was best at. Somebody would say rebounding, or you do football drills, all this BS. What I think I've been really successful at is spending time with people. And yeah, you spend time with people, it gives you a little more leeway on what you want to demand. And if a kid tells me, I want to be a great pitcher, I want to be a great hitter, I'm going to say, okay, are you willing to do this to become that? Mm-hmm. And if he says yes, then I feel it's my job to hold him accountable to those dreams and goals. And some people don't like that.
That's right. You talk about adults having changed. You've been very tough on your players over the many years, especially your point guards. And it came to a head with Aaron Henry a couple of years ago, after which you were contrite, weren't you, Tom? You said, you know, maybe I do need to back off a little bit.
I said that because all you guys went crazy. You know, Aaron's dad didn't go crazy. Aaron's dad called me and said, hey, you know what? He deserved it. You know, Aaron didn't go crazy. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, we look at so many things right now, yeah, in such a crazy way. If I went home and told my parents I wanted to transfer, after my dad picked me back up off the floor and told me that I'm not doing that, you know, I mean, I look at that and now we're not even allowed to, you know, talk to a kid in a certain way, right, much less. Right. I mean, I understand you can't grab them. You can't do this. I mean,
sure,
everything's changed, but guys, we're gone too far to the other,
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, sure, it's like my mom would say, I love you. You know that, but I don't like you right now. And so when you, Aaron Henry knows you, I think what you're saying is that Aaron Henry knows you love him. You got a long relationship with him. I'm angry with you right now. That's not the permanent thing. I still love you. And I think that's what maybe.
Well, Eli, you know, the great part of that. So that was in the first game that year that we ended up going to a Final Four. And you know who one of my best players
was? Aaron Henry was terrific.
Aaron
after
Henry,
that,
you know, and everybody wanted to make every press conference. What about? I said, well, here, go talk to him. I'm an open book. Go talk to him. You know, ask him if he's mad at me. Hey, Draymond was mad at me half his career. You know, he's still mad at me sometimes, but I'm mad at him sometimes too. You know, it's one thing I think I got up here, it's equal opportunity. You know, and yet it's work because we care about each other. And that's really the bottom line.
Just for the record, I had two kids that one graduated from MSU and the other one spent 2 years there. My grandson, Timmy, and okay, my granddaughter, Chrissy. So, and she got, make quick story quick. She got hired by Amazon for $128,000 2 weeks after she graduated from MSU. Is there a bigger story in the history of MSU? Yes,
hey, sir. And Eli's still doing what he's doing.
Yeah, he's still
but he went, but Tom, he went to Michigan. You know that.
That's the problem.
State, and I'm doing what I'm doing. So now a few years ago, you're slipping and sliding through the snow over to Chicago. You're almost living with the great Jabari Parker, who wound up signing with Mike Krzyzewski. And the whole time that was going on, I'm thinking to myself, why does Tom need this? Why does Tom need to be doing this, begging these kids to accept the free scholarship to my alma mater? You're a hell of a golfer. Wouldn't you rather be somewhere warm in the wintertime playing golf?
You know, I would, but I think Denny would tell you this too, that, you know, overrated. One thing I'm not going to do is when I'm not willing to slip and slide, or fly all night to get from Vegas to Orlando for a tournament, I'm getting out. I mean, it's simple. I'm not going to cheat the university that's done so much for me. And I'm not going to cheat my profession. But at the same time, hey, the last 3-4 years, we've got a lot going on up here. And I've had my moments when I said, what am I doing? You know? And then when a player comes back or Steve Smith comes up or somebody else, you know, and you realize you're watching guys that are becoming successful, making a lot more money than me. So I'm hoping they're donating to the Izzo retirement fund, but whatever, you know, it's rewarding for me. I mean, my goals have changed, and, you know, even in this pandemic and this racial injustice, I got some new goals. I mean, we got to try to help people. And, and that's what I like, you know, and it's funny with Eli there, but I am a big Bo Schembechler fan. I read his books. I love Bo. He was great. He treated me good. He used to meet me in the tunnel and say, "Well, the only reason I like you, I don't like where you're from, but you like football." I said, "Yeah, yeah." You know, so he accepted me, you know, I got, you know, everything was cool. So I like that, but I've learned, you know, I've learned from baseball. I've learned from football. I think it's great that I'm different than a Bobby Knight or a Mike Krzyzewski. I love a lot of sports because I learned from them. My buddy Mariucci helped me get through a lot of things in football. You know, his season was in opposite time as mine. So I think I'm still learning, and I think that's good. And I think if I get to the point where I know everything, I'm probably out of here.
And I think I know the answer to this next question, but what's your reaction to the possibility that some of these kids are going to be able to have an opportunity to make money if they want to stay in college?
You know, the NIL, it's called, I think a lot of people have great ideas.
Yeah.
And they sound like great ideas. How they're executed seems impossible to me. You know, there's Title IX implications. There's different things. I don't know about you, but, you know, to see a guy over here in the locker room making
right
a decent amount of money, and then over here in the locker room, because we got to manage the locker rooms. You know, locker rooms are tough. The most important part of championship organizations, as you know better than me. Yep. And so I don't know how this is going to work.
Yeah, there's no plan.
It sounds good in theory, but the reality of it, I think, is going to have a lot of hiccups. And I'm worried about where the college team's going.
I'll tell you the reason I liked it, because I thought it would keep some kids a little longer in college rather than jumping out in the first year.
All right, let me ask you this, Danny. Yeah. You take this. So, first of all, I don't know how much money you think they can make. There's so many implications on everything.
Right.
But right now, a first round pick in the NBA is going to make $4, $5, $6 million and be guaranteed $20 million. They ain't making that at any college.
That's for sure.
I tell you that right now. And so I don't know if it's going to keep guys in. I'm all for helping kids get more to be able to live more comfortably. You know, unlike me, when I was a GA here at 27, had enough money. You know, everybody asked me, why aren't you married at 29? I couldn't find a girl that would marry me making $4,000 a year. You know, they just don't exist. So, you know, I think kids should have some freedom to do stuff like that. But, you know, you look at it the other way. When you're 18, money can be a problem too. You know, there's a lot of bad things that go with it.
Yes,
so
sir.
I just wish people would learn to deal with the process. The reason I like the baseball rule, if you were that good to come right out, then there's a place for you to go to make money. If not, you come in for 3 years, you know, maybe in basketball, I was hoping it'd be 2 years. The hard thing about the one and done, these kids barely even get to enjoy any part of college. I mean, college is a great social development part of your life. It's not just athletically. It's because to be a great pro, as I think you guys use the term, a pro's pro. What does that mean? Yep. You're great at what you do, but you're great at how you handle it. Yep. To be a good pro's pro, it helps to have some education, some base, some social growth before you get into that world. And that's why we see so many guys losing their money and making bad decisions. So it's a coin flip for me, Danny. It really is. Yeah.
You know, there's been a couple of cautionary tales. I think Alon Krueger is a cautionary tale. John Beilein's a cautionary tale. You've been in Michigan, at least since for 47 years. You've been tempted. How have you avoided the temptations? And I guess are the two temptations more money to go pro and also to test yourself at the highest level? Clearly, by staying, you've become a legend. You're in the Hall of Fame. You couldn't ask for anything else. How tempting has it been, and what brought you back to Michigan State each time?
Well, there were a couple times it was very tempting, if you want the truth, and probably more times than were even reported. But, you know, I look at myself, I there's times I say, man, I would like to challenge myself for the best. But pro sports, I mean, it really is elite. And I talked to John about it. And, you know, I don't think John left just to challenge himself. There's things that are going on in college sports right now that are, they're hard, you know, the recruiting, the losing a player. He went through a couple of tough years with some things, and he didn't fail because he wasn't a good enough coach. I mean, as Denny knows, you know, when you move to the pro ranks, your general manager, you know, I mean, listen, in high school, you can do more with average players. You can win with great coaching. In college, good players, good coaching equals, you know, you got a chance.
Sure.
In pro ball, you need great players. I mean, you really do. I mean, you still need some good coaching. You need good direction. But the players do play the game, even at the college level, I think. And so I think what brought me back, I'm looking out here right now at our brand new hockey facility going up. I love to go to football games. Denny, you'd be happy to know I walk over to Jake Boston and watch a baseball game. I do watch a women's softball game. I love the fall to roll of what college. There's 50,000 students walking by my window, and it keeps me younger, you know? So yeah, sure. You miss out on some things, but you gain some things.
This is a lengthy answer coming up from you, Tom. Not a lengthy question from me, but all the disasters that have befallen Michigan State, from Nasser to the resignation of one of your best friends, Mark D'Antonio. How do you put this into words, and how do you look back on everything that's happened?
Toughest period of time that I've ever gone through here, you know, were those 3 years, you know, and for the survivors, for all the people, you know, there's so many things I don't know. But it was very difficult. The Mark D'Antonio thing, I was a big part of. I was part of hiring him. I got to be part of when he hung it up. And there was no pressure. There was no bad things with that. You know, you get to the point where, as one of you guys said, you know, chasing 17-year-olds isn't as much fun, you know. Right. And then you get to the point where you look at it. To be an athlete, Denny, to be a coach, you do a lot of sacrificing. You know, you miss a lot of family time. And sometimes you say, you know, in Mark's case, his daughter got married. She's having a baby. In fact, maybe today. You kind of want to transcend into your next part of life. And I think sometimes, you know, what coaches do, and I got to be careful about this. I want to retire to live. I don't want to retire to die.
Good idea.
And so you got to pick and choose what time. Like, the only thing that's helped me, and I've said this publicly, through this pandemic, I'm in the best shape of my life, Eli. I'm in better shape. I ride my Peloton, my bike. I do my sit-ups. I said, I'm happy that I'm going to be 10 more years, you know, that I'm going to be able to do whatever I want to do. Now, my wife's boyfriend's not happy because you have to wait longer to get the money. But, I mean, other than that, most people are happy. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to stay healthy, stay happy, but knowing my time is up, because I really dislike people that just try to carry it on for no reason, you know. And if I do that, one of you guys call me and slap me.
I sure will.
Don't slap me. Just kind of wave your finger.
No slap. We don't slap anymore. By the way, I've just looked at my bike that still has the price tag on. we won't use it very soon. But let me ask you this. You ever think that life could get so good as where you are today? I mean, you are the king. You are the guy.
I don't feel like I'm the king, but I tell you what, life has been good to Tom Izzo. Michigan State's been good. The state of Michigan's been good to me. I mean, you know, I the people I've gotten a chance to meet, the sporting events I've gotten a chance to go to. I mean, it's been a, you know, Judd Heathcote always said a good deal is only one that's a good deal for you and a good deal for me. And you know what? I think Michigan State's been a good deal for me. The state of Michigan's been good to me.
Sure.
I think I've been pretty good to them. And so it's been a good deal, you know, and ain't broke, why fix it? You know, I mean, could I have something different? Yeah. Could they have something different? Sure. Do they get sick of you when you've been here too long? The same interviews. That's why I'm going to try to change a little bit, Bob. I'm going to no more waving fingers. Can't slap guys. Can't have pads on in practice. I mean, it's going to get to be no fun pretty soon, but all that being said and done, hopefully I don't change two things. Treat people like I want to be treated and hold people accountable to the task that they need to do to get where they want to get. Those two things stay the same. I'm good.
I was watching the game that Winston broke Cleve's record for most assists, and I actually got a little teary eyed. Not that I'm that much in love with the team that beats Michigan all the time, but the point being is I appreciate the fact that you honor the brand and that it was forward thinking. This is what makes Michigan State basketball great in any franchise. It's the linking the present with the past and reminding people who you are, where you came from. And I thought that was very, I liked it. Even though it might be a standard practice, you bring Mateen back, you get those 14,000 people to appreciate where you've come, the history, the Flintstones. This, and so I can see it's important to you to keep on promoting the brand. And in my view, you can't do anything more important for a school.
Yeah.
Well, Eli, I appreciate you saying that, because I think if there's one thing I tried to do a little different even than Judd, Gus Kanakis was my radio guy until the year before he died. He was 91, I think, and still doing the radio. You know, we got to the point we had to carry him to the plane. We had to get a manager to bring him home. But I said, Gus, as long as you can do it, man, because I respect what you did here. I respect. And that was like 8 years as head coach. Then Judd was 19. You know, so that's what, 27. And then I've been 25. So, you know, we got 52, 53 years. And the first thing I did the first year was try to get a reunion of all the former guys, bring back Johnny Green. And I needed Gus to help me get those guys from the 50s and 60s. Yeah. And then Magic, you know, still here. And he's been so good. Steve Smith was my first recruit. Mateen and those guys come back all the time. And we did do that night. In fact, we were taking Mateen on a trip with us, him and his son, the next day, if he didn't break the record there, so he could do it at Purdue. And we still wanted him in the locker room with him. And I think that is.
And you haven't mentioned Draymond either. I mean, he's been amazing for you guys.
Yeah. And Draymond's been very good for us. And those guys, they come back. Now Magic helps that a lot. You know, yeah. Steve Smith, I mean, guys that were icons help that a lot when your best of the best come back. Gregory Kelser, I mean, he calls every week. Is there anything I can do for you? I mean, he might be the classiest guy. Him and Smitty are just unbelievable kids, but or people, and they're not kids. I played against Greg. Figure that out. My first start was against Greg Kelser at Northern Michigan.
He's only two years younger than you, by the way.
Yeah, Gus brought his team older. Up to Northern. Yeah. And I appreciate you seeing that, Eli, because I think that's part of the culture we've created here. And it's been 50-some years that those same three guys that have been involved, and that makes it easier for the players to come back.
I got just one more thing, Tom. Thank you so much for spending so much time with us today.
Great, Tommy.
I had in New York years ago, I had Cal Ripken Jr. on my interview show there, and I was the first person to ask him, is there any chance you could beat Garrick's record? And he poo-pooed the whole thing. I'm asking you right now. You're a young man. You're in great shape. You're motivated. Can you become the winningest coach in the history of college basketball?
How many more wins will that take?
Hell no. Here's an easy answer.
Well, 900. You got over six, right?
Yeah, but no.
That's at least 10 more years.
I'm not doing that. I'm not dying in this chair. I'm going to be able to go out and watch you guys and have some fun. But it's funny because last year I went out and spoke. Cal Ripken has a big deal out there for charity. Yeah. And I got a chance to meet him for the first time. That was a lot of fun for me. And that's what I'm saying. I get to do some cool things because of this job. But I'm leaving that for Mike. You know, he's got 1,000 whatever wins. I'd like to just start catching him in those championship things, you know. But maybe most of all, guys, what I'd like to leave here is that I did it the right way. I'd like to leave here that I helped a lot of guys that maybe weren't the superstars get to where they want to get, and that we kept a culture that people would appreciate. And so that's the goal here. And yet, thanks to Peloton and a few bikes and maybe a little bit the pandemic, I got a few more years left in me now. And, you know,
well,
my wife's going to have to put up with that.
Tommy, I got a real nice bike over here. I can bring you over.
He's got his own. You don't even give me a deal on that thing, right, Danny?
Hell, I'll give it to you.
Well, Tom, we certainly hope we see you play this year. Obviously, it's out of your hands. The things change so quickly. We're all in a terrible state of confusion, but it's been great reliving some of the times, your history, and really thanks for spending time with us today.
The best. Thank you.
Well, guys, let me tell you, you know, you never know how these are going to go, but you guys have brought a little laughter and fun to my day. So I appreciate you guys having me on. And if you need me on again sometime,
we'll be at that.
Tom, open the door.
Tom, we're going to call again tomorrow.
All right. I'll make time for you guys.
Right. Tom, you know, that's the whole idea of the show. We have fun and we have a lot of laughs. So I know we've made a new fan in you. Tell everybody in Michigan that we're on. Damn it. Go to our website.
Tom. All right. Go to the website and do me a favor, okay? Unlike some people. Wear your mask.
There you go.
Wear your mask.
Tom just put on a black mask.
And but Tom, one other thing, real quick. Your Mad Dog guy over there in Lansing, he loves you.
Yeah, I got some people that are nuts, just like you guys got friends that are nuts. But it's been a good run for me, guys. Whoever thought I'd be here 37 years? You know, when I was that punk GA for Judd, I begged him for a job with a broken jaw. My first interview with him, and it's kind of grown from there. I've got a lot of good people that have helped me and appreciate you guys. You guys are a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Great. Continue
success.
Take
care, huh?
Take care, Tom. Bye-bye.
All right. See you guys.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, guys. Take care, man.
You too.
Okay. So anyway, that was terrific.
That was very, that was terrific.
We figured he would be. There's so, these big-time coaches, and this extends to Bo, and believe it or not, even Woody, when they want to be charming, when they're relaxed, when they're just BS and they're funnier than hell and they're great people to talk
to. Listen, that's one of the keys to being successful is the ability to communicate, to get people to trust you and like you. He meets moms. He meets moms and dads that grew up
long.
In different situations. And you have to be that kind of chameleon, really, and be a genuine guy, I think, in many ways, for it to work. And
I told a quick 30-second story there when I worked for the Sox for about 90 days, and I got my ass eaten out by a father and a mother in Des Moines, Iowa. And I have never in my life had anybody scream at me like that ever before or after. And I mean, like I had shot one of her kids, for God's sake.
Go to a Little League game sometime.
Listen, the names that I was called when I was playing Little League baseball, you would be shocked at the names that families would call you because all you did was win. And my father was a tough guy to begin with. And my dad would say, you got something to say to my son? You say it to me, bud. And nobody wanted to talk to my dad.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Enjoyed Tom Izzo. We will see you again on Monday for another edition of No Filter Sports.
Have a good one.
Good weekend. Stay safe.